everyone. Welcome back to the Freedom Journey. I'm Steve. I'm here with my friend Clyde. And today we're going to dive into a topic that often brings more confusion than clarity. In Christianity, prayer can feel like a huge burden. We got prayer lists for every day of the week, guilt if we don't spend hours on our knees, and the pressure of just having the right amount of faith to get answers to our prayers. And we hear about prayer meetings, prayer chains, healing services, intercessory prayer, prayer walks, spiritual warfare, praying scripture. And I'm sure you guys can think of many other types of things that are types of prayer. The list goes on and on. And just for our family right now, this topic kind of hits close to home. We've been facing some tough times. Two of our loved ones are battling cancer, and another is struggling with serious back issues. And people have been incredibly kind, telling us they're praying, they're rallying more people to pray, and even involving an orphanage in India to lift us up in prayer. Mm. But meanwhile, both family members with cancer are responding well to treatments. So is this an answer to prayer? Or is it just medical science doing it work? What would have happened if we wouldn't have prayed? You know, would it have went a lot differently? So on this podcast, we focus on freedom. And today we're going to explore how prayer can bring you peace and freedom, mm-hmm. rather than guilt and pressure that often comes from traditional religious expectations. And so that's our approach today. And the first question I have for you, Clyde, what is the purpose of prayer if God is all-knowing and his will is sovereign?
Well, you know, first, Steve, I appreciate your comments there at the beginning. And we're talking about this journey of freedom. And you're so right that we have, there's a lot of bondage related to prayer. You know, a lot of our understanding of prayer, just like any other subject, comes from tradition and comes from men reading certain passages of scripture and telling us what they mean, and from the influence of our circles that we're in and the people who are in them, the literature we read, the hymns that we sing. When I was a young man, I don't know if I've discussed this before, you know, but for as long as I can remember, you know, I had a love for God and a desire to know him and please him. And the only way I knew how to do that was in the context of the religion that I was brought up in, you know, and I gave it my very best, you know, and so prayer was a huge part of that. And, you know, when I think back over it, I think about some of the big factors that were involved. And I'll get to your question, just sort of preliminary. We're sharing our journey here. And it may be a journey that others know as well. I found that hymns often somehow, you know, affected the way I thought about things. And for instance, there was an old hymn from 1845 by William Walford that says, "Sweet hour of prayer." And I took that real literal when I was really young. You know, we'd sing it in church and I'd think, oh my gosh, I got to pray for an hour. And wow, how much a bondage that is, you know, and, you know, I'd gravel on the floor and trying to find God, trying to seek for God, trying to please him, trying to get to know him, you know, it's just a part of our journey in religion, you know, I know now that it was a activity of futility, you know. But nonetheless, it was God's stage he was taking me through. As a young man, I was greatly influenced by Christian biographies. They were, other than the scriptures themselves and maybe some Bible study books, probably the only other kind of literature I really ever read, other than what was required in school, was Christian biographies, great men of God, you know, and I loved to read about them and read what they said. And in fact, I went back and dug a couple quotes that had big impact on me. One of them is Martin Luther. And he said, "I have so much to do that I shall spend the first 3 hours in prayer." Talking about his day. His day was so full and he had so much to accomplish, he'd spend the first 3 hours in prayer. Okay, that can really have an effect on a young man, you know? And if he thinks this is, you know, if this is your model somehow, you know? And now, you know, I just, you know, I raised my eyebrow like, okay, you know, is he trying to impress somebody, or, you know, what's he doing for these 3 hours, you know? And then Charles Spurgeon, who I looked up to a lot, he said, "I know of no better thermometer to your spiritual temperature than the measure of the intensity of your prayer." So not only does it have to be sweet hour prayer or 3 hours every morning, but it's got to be intense if that's your spiritual thermometer. Intense, you know? And this is what some people call prevailing prayer. Somehow you got to maneuver your way in. I don't know if you're trying to beat off all the competition who's praying and get to the front of the line, get his attention. Hey, I'm here. Anyway, these are, that's really great bondage. And so you ask this question about, okay, if we know God's sovereign and we do start as this is our foundation here on our freedom journey, that God is sovereign. He's absolutely sovereign. We'll discuss that a little more in relationship to prayer. But if he is, then what is the purpose of prayer? You know, Paul talks about in Colossians 1:10, he talks about growing in the realization of God. And so it's a journey. And as we learn more about God, it affects and changes everything in our life. Every doctrine, every practice, and of course that, you know, that includes prayer. And so what we have to ask ourselves, yeah, is what is the purpose of prayer? And one would just start with, what does the word mean? You know, I've spent a lot of time in my life trying to ascertain that, you know, and it's really actually pretty simple. Well, now it is, decades later. The concordant literal version in the New Testament in the back, it has that keyword concordance, and it gives you the Greek word and its parts. And interestingly enough, the Greek word for prayer is its three parts, a compound word with three different parts. And so it's in the keyword concordance, if you have one, it's on page 229, and it's toward, like looking toward something, well, W-E-L-L, okay, good, and having, possessing something. Now that's an odd word. It's toward will, excuse me, toward well having. So the idea of this word that gets translated prayer is that our approach is toward all the things in our life, all our circumstances, all the people in our lives, ourselves, the people we love, our family, our friends, our neighbors. It's toward all these circumstances, and all is well, all is good. And then that last part is having that. Prayer is, the purpose of prayer is it's a means by which we have, we possess a wellness concerning everything. And prayer is a process in which God divinely operates in bringing us to this place of wellness, of settledness, of calmness, of resting, of relaxing. And so that's the purpose of prayer. Now, it's interesting. There's a Bible called the Eminence Bible, and its translation of prayer is to hold in well-being, you know. And there's a lot of, obviously there's a lot of stress in life and cancer in people you love. You'd almost rather have it yourself than someone you love. I think there's no greater suffering than the suffering that you experience in the suffering of someone you love. And just all the struggles of life. And so prayer's this opportunity, prayer's this divine vehicle of energizing that allows us to hold all of our circumstances and all the people in our lives in some state of well-being. And of course that's the way it's translated there. To me, it's expressed in a song by H.G. Spafford that he did in 1873, "It Is Well With My Soul." And we probably know the story behind that being written. And Spafford was going to go to Europe to teach. And his family went ahead early on a earlier ship. And the ship went down and his family perished. And on hearing that, he wrote this song, "It Is Well With My Soul." And this line here, I'll read you from the song. "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul." And where that teaching often happens is doctrine of realization meets circumstance in our thoughts and communication with God. And it brings this state of, you wrote the article, chillaxing. It brings us to this place of calmness and letting go and knowing all is well because everything's operating according to God's perfect design and will. Now, it's interesting, the Aramaic word for prayer, its meaning is adjustment. The root of the Aramaic word for prayer is adjustment. And prayer is an adjustment. We tend to think from Christianity we're trying to adjust God. I think we all do realize this, that prayer is an adjustment, you know. And we need God to adjust some things. We need to adjust what he's doing. We need to adjust our circumstances. We need him to change some stuff. And we think that's what prayer's about. We're going to affect some change on God. In fact, the opposite's true. Yes, prayer's about change. But we are not holding things, our circumstances and our family and ourselves, in well-being because we're going to get God to change. We're going to hold things in well-being and calmness because we know God doesn't change. And that changes us. And so the purpose of prayer, you know, that's it. It adjusts. It doesn't change God. It adjusts our view of God. You know, sometimes how you know something, it seems like you know something, and then you talk with someone about what you know, it dawns on you all of a sudden in that conversation, it like clicks and comes together. You know, this is that opportunity we have with God. We talk to him about things, you know, and I'll just tell you, you know, along the way, and we grow as we go, you know. But somewhere in the, you know, in the past, you know, I'd go to God and say, oh God, you need to do something here, you know. And then I could hear a verse, you know, that, you know, lots of verses about lots of different things that would contradict what I was talking to him about, you know. And so that adjustment would be made. I like this. I'll give you one quote here. I was trying to think of some of my favorite quotes. Negative. I gave those to you early from Luther and who was it? Who else did I give you there? Anyway, Spurgeon. Here's a great quote from A.E. Nock, and he says, "Those who know God do not wish to change him. Neither do they wish to change his purpose or his plan." The whole idea of us trying to get God to do something different or to change our circumstances is because we don't yet have the realization that not only is God absolutely in control, and I think there is a sense of that. We know God's in control. That's why we would ask him to do some stuff, because he can do it. But the real adjustment comes in not just knowing that he is sovereign and that he can do something and he can do whatever he wants, but that he's already doing that. And he doesn't need us to change it, you know. I love, you know, the scriptures ask the question about God, who has been his counselor? Somebody step up who's going to advise God and counsel him about what he needs to do. But that's what most of Christianity does when they pray, isn't it? They're advising God. First of all, they're advising God about the situation as if he didn't know. Oh, yeah, by the way, God, my wife's really sick. He said, oh, she is. Well, tell me more about that. And so we counsel him about the problem, and then we've already, hey, and by the way, I already figured out what the solution is. I want you to heal her, you know. And he said, oh, okay. Let me think about that a minute. No. See, the omnipotent God who knows everything, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present God, he knows all the circumstances. He knows the end from the beginning, and he's got everything well under control. So again, the purpose of prayer is the settling into a state of well-being, knowing that God works all things after the counsel of his own will. So I would say that's the, yes, we believe in the sovereignty of God. What's the purpose of prayer? It's in the word itself. Looking again here at the concordant, toward well having, possessing a wellness toward all things.
So I'm not looking at our question list, but so to look at this practically. So you have a loved one,
yeah,
who's really sick. and things are not looking good. So what would that prayer be like?
Okay. Yeah. You know what? And here's the thing. Here's the wonderful thing. We don't have a script. God didn't give us a divine script on how to pray. Now, a lot of people think that he did in the Lord's Prayer, the model prayer. His disciples asking. But we need to understand that that's the Lord Jesus Christ, the King of Israel, the Messiah, who's talking to his disciples. There's a dispensational context. And in fact, you hear it in the prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy will be done on earth as it is. Thy kingdom come. Thy will. It's all about the coming kingdom. So it was a dispensational prayer. There's no, other than the prayer of Paul, the prayer for realization. There's the dispensational aspect, the prayer of realization that Paul repeats in Ephesians and Colossians. You know, that's where we are. But so we don't have a script. And here's the thing. You can talk to God about anything. And there's not a right or wrong way to go about it. You can't say anything wrong to God. You know, you can't ask. If you're going to ask, you can't ask anything wrong. Okay. That's the good thing. So the first thing to do is freedom. And you can literally, talk to God about anything. Romans 8, 26. Paul said that we are not aware of what we should pray for. There's not an awareness of that. Okay, that's good to know. I don't know how to pray. You know, so if you ask me how to pray, I don't know how to pray. You know, there's not an awareness. But the glorious thing in there is there's this unuttered prayer. There is God's Spirit is doing this work of wellness, holding all our loved ones and circumstances in this well-being. God's Spirit is operating in that. So let's think about prayer. This helps me. Let's think about prayer as this conversation with God. And number one, we know he's sovereign. So we got that down. Another important principle that we need to add to sovereignty is his fatherhood, that he's the Father. Christ came and introduced us primarily to God as the Father, and he taught his disciples to pray to him, our Father, in that respect. And Jesus Christ, in his prayer, called him, when he addressed him, he called him Abba. And then Paul says, we have the spirit of sonship and call him Abba, that is Father. So we first need to know, okay, yeah, he's large and in charge. He's the supreme deity of the universe. He has absolute control. But when it comes to talking with him, he's dad. And that's Abba. Not just father, he's daddy, papa. You know, whatever real term of endearment, whatever you would have called your earthly dad that was precious and tender. You know, if you had that kind of relationship. And even if you didn't have that kind of relationship, you know what that kind of relationship should have been. You know, so you say daddy or papa. And you just talk to him. 38 days. There's a picture that I have in my head of the White House in the Oval Office that was taken by a photographer, came in when John F. Kennedy was the president. And he took some photographs 38 days before Kennedy was assassinated. And there's this little picture of John all around the Oval Office. And there's these beautiful shots of him under the desk, peeping out of his dad's desk. And more than anything else, in that Oval Office, who was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States? Who was he to John? John? He was Daddy. Okay. You and I would have had no chance ever getting in that office. Let alone would we be playing under his desk. Okay. 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 It's this beautiful picture, and we need that first and foremost. This is our dad. You can't do anything wrong. You can't use the wrong word. You can't pray the wrong prayer. You can't have the wrong thought. He's going to say, give me your hand. I'm going to slap your hand for saying. So you know what, Steve, you can say anything you want to God.
Can you yell at God?
Huh?
Can you yell at God?
You can yell at him. Yeah. You could say bad words to him. He's got big, broad shoulders. And you know who's the great example of that is Jesus Christ. Garden of Gethsemane, isn't it? He could say anything he wants to the Father. And he's in agony. He's in an awful place. And he actually tells God what he'd like God to do about it. Right? His Father. So there's Jesus, and he says, okay, let this cup pass from me. That's what I want. Nevertheless, not my will. So Christ had a will, just wasn't free. And then in the end, he submitted his will to the will of the Father. Now, it's really easy to do in little things going on through the day. But when there's some really, really gut-wrenching things like Christ went through, you can tell God anything. He's your dad. And you can say, oh, just say anything. I can't believe this is happening. This is so hard. And God, you know, your wife has cancer. You know, you say, oh my God, I love her so much. Oh. And you can say anything you want. And somewhere in the middle of all that, you're knowing how loving God is. These truths that we're knowing, we know how wonderful God is. We know how wise he is. We know that he's sovereign, and we know that he works. He's the one operating all for good, all, including the bad. And in the middle of all that, you're gaining a deeper realization in your being that all is okay, you know? And it's the truth that we know, that we hear, this voice from God. He's got this all under control. He does love me, you know? And in the middle of all that, you know, our will becomes aligned to his. It's just a beautiful place. Some people would say, well, if you can't change God's plan or mine, then why pray? People say, then why pray? Because somehow we've reduced prayer. John R. Rice had a book that had an impact on me when I was young, big, thick book on prayer. It's called Prayer, Asking and Receiving. We tend to think that that's what prayer is. It's asking for stuff and getting stuff. It's a divine vending machine. You know, we put in the right amount of currency, the right amount of time, the right amount of people praying, enough gumption, enough sincerity, enough power, and we're going to get God to do something. And that's never what prayer's about. Now, you might see in the Old Testament examples of someone praying for something and getting it, but it's because God had already told them that this is what he wanted them to have, and if they had asked, he would do that. Very specific things, okay? But not for us, not in the secret administration, you know? And so we're coming to this place of being well with toward all our circumstances and having this as our possession. Let's think of it this way. So, you know, people say, well, why pray? Well, you know, Steve, you may talk to me about some of the problems that when you and I get on the phone, you know, sometimes we'll update each other about our lives. We're not expecting that either one of us are going to do anything directly about it. We just know we love each other and we're concerned about each other and we want to hear. Now, certainly if we could do something, we would do something. But God, yes, could God do something? Yes, and he already did. It's already perfect. He did it without counselors. Everything's perfect. You know, I got a book, Being Okay with Not Being Okay. It's all just the way God designed it. Couldn't be any better. And that process of talking to him will help us remember that and bring it to our realization. But let's just say for a moment, you know, so we might ask ourselves, well, Claude, why do you talk to Steve? He can't change anything. Well, you know, my talking to Steve has nothing to do about changing stuff. We're friends, you know? We love each other, you know? Or you know, somebody said, well, why are you telling Clyde about your problems? He's not gonna do anything about them, you know? So to me, it shows what a demeaning view we have of prayer, that we think prayer's just about getting some stuff from God. And we gotta figure out the right formula, the right combination, the right series of circumstances, you know, to make the cosmic vending machine pour out whatever it is that we're looking for. Let's suppose for a moment, here's an illustration. It'll be a poor illustration, human illustration. But let's say that you and I are brothers and physical brothers, and we have a dad, and he is just an example of fatherhood and an example of wisdom. And he has, he's planned out, you know, our family business and everything. And it's a well-oiled and running wonderfully. And we have some concerns that we want to talk to him about, you know, and are we talking to him about them because we think he's wrong and he's not doing things right and we're attempting to get him to change his mind or direction? Or are just we talking about things that are on our heart that we don't understand and just looking for new direction? Are you follow that? And so when I hear people say, you know, when they think they're not going to get anything from God and they say, why pray? I thought, wow, okay. It's a relationship thing. And so, yeah.
So how can, you know, we run into people who are, of course, everybody's dealing with something. And another kind of a practical application to all this. So, you know, in the past, we always said, well, man, I'm sorry for what's going on in your life. I'm praying for you.
Yeah.
Or you're in our thoughts and prayers or something like that. So how can we relate to people who are going through things, kind of knowing that we care about them? But, you know, we're not going to go through, you know, like, I'm going to pray for you every night or something like that. So
sure. Yeah. Well, you know, when people tell me that, I know when people tell me, you know, I'm thinking about you and praying for you, I know, unless they're close to me and I know they know the things that I know, it's really such a wonderful kind expression of the heart that someone's doing that. And I take it that way. I don't try to, you know, I don't try to get on anybody for that. I say, oh, thank you so much. Cause I know it, again, it's an expression of the heart. And I do appreciate that. I appreciate someone's, you know, you appreciate when someone thinks about you and cares about you, you know, or at a loss to know what to do about it, you know, and really the same way with us. Okay. We know and understand that's a way that people communicate their concern and they can perceive it. And it is true. If, you know, if you tell me about, you know, your son-in-law and your wife, you know, I can easily tell you that you all, you know, that they're both in my thoughts, and I can tell you that they're both in my prayers. And it's just that I have a divine realization about what prayer is, but it doesn't change the fact that I hold them, I toward them, I have well-being, and I know God's got this all. So it's easy to say, you're in my thoughts and prayer, no doubt about it. Now let's make a little adjustment, okay? I know one of the things that you raised when we were going to talk about this is Paul talks about pray without ceasing. And to me, this is like at the very key from Paul of understanding what's going on. Now let's go back to the sovereignty of God for a moment. When I was progressing my way through the sovereignty of God in realization, you know, I came to realize that God was in charge of all things. And so I would use language like, okay, God is writing your life and God is writing mine. Absolutely in charge, writing it. And I may be able to influence maybe that, but he's sovereign. But you know, when David says that all my days were written in your book, your scroll, before there were any of them, all my days were written. Not you're writing my life as we go along. It's pre-written. It's already a done deal, you know? So I read back, I sometimes read some of my old stuff and says, don't worry because God's writing your life. Well, no, don't worry. God's already written it. Now you're just living the script, you know? So then this whole thing, pray without ceasing. And I used to hear people say, you know, it's all, some people interpret that to mean that don't give up. Don't give up on prayer. Don't stop. And then others see it as this, that you're always in this attitude of prayer. And I actually think I lean toward that latter one, except let me explain to you how I see it now. And let me tell you how my prayer life goes now. It almost goes, Norman Grubb, he has this great thing where he says that he doesn't pray. And he came to this place where he doesn't pray anymore. And then when asked about it, he says, I'm talking about traditional prayer. You know, so, and it's because we moved to some other place in our understanding of God. And I'll give you a couple examples of what leads me to what I'm getting ready to tell you. And that is that prayer is not for me, not to say that I can't, but prayer to me is not about stopping what I'm doing and going to a closet somewhere and getting down on my knees. I tell you what, things get bad enough. I'm not saying I wouldn't do that and just lay there and cry. You know, it's Dad. You can tell him anything. But the thing is, Paul told the Athenians on Mars Hill, for in him we live and move and have our being. I'm alive with the life of God in me. My very movement is him. Everything I do is about him, written by him. And to me, this having or holding toward well-being in all things is that constant realization of that. And that constant realization of that is prayer. Having toward well-being. That he's always present with me. I can't be alive without that. If you, and I use this illustration sometimes, it helps me. If you came to visit and you were sitting here beside me and we were, let's just say we're just, you know, you're here for a bit and we're working on some projects and I'm working on my part and you're working on your part. We're right here in the room with each other and we could still be having communication without saying anything, just by being together in the same room. You know, my grandfather was very stoic. He hardly ever said anything. And I loved to be with him. And he hardly ever said anything to me, you know, and we'd just be together. And it was wonderful. From my perspective, you know, and God is always present. I live and move and have my being in God. Now we're going to take this a little further here, but I'm just trying to get us, you know, where my journey leads me. And if I am not conscious of him, then I'm ignoring him. I mean, if you were here and I went about stuff I was doing while you were working on some stuff, but I never acknowledged you were here, you know, just like walked past you and just, you know. So it's this mindfulness that's always present, you know. I describe it as, not that I'm always in this place, but the wonderful place that I am in well-being, holding it, is when he's just in my constant thoughts, you know? And you wake up in the morning and you say, and the thing is, you don't even have to say it. Every thought we have is toward God. Every thought we have is toward God. Every breath we breathe is toward God. And you wake up in the morning, and I'm just going to, and I say, good morning, Lord. Wow. You gave me another resurrection from the dead. You gave me another waking day. I can hardly wait to see what you've got in store today. Now, sometimes I'll say that, but I don't have to say that. I just think it. You understand what I'm saying? Wow. Okay. And here to me is the beautiful part of this. When God made Adam, he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul. He became alive. You ever notice when you're going through something hard, You sigh. When you're with someone, the groaning creation, you take a deep breath. Okay, I'm not trying to get into pantheism here, but there's a glorious truth that is immanence. In fact, we dealt with it in BSN, I think it's 1033, the immanence of God. Not immanent like some people will say that Christ's coming is immanent, but immanence and that definition is that present in the creation. And God is in us. We live and move and have our being. His breath is in us. When I breathe, that's the Father. He breathed it in. And I'll live as long as his breath is in me. And when his breath is gone, I will, right now I'm inhaling. And that's called inspiration. And when I die, that's called expiration. That when you put let the air out, it's expiration. And that final breath is an expiration. We have an expiration date. God is always with me. He is my life. His breath is mine. When I breathe his breath and life. Again, we're not talking about pantheism. We're talking about a real person of absolute deity, God, who lives in us. And if we ever, at that point, those points in our life when we realize just being alive is fellowship and communion with God, just breathing his air, just everything's the presence of God. Every thought I have is a prayer. When I think of you, Steve, with love and appreciation and thankfulness, it's a prayer. It's having in well-being you and me. It is a prayer. So when you say to someone, you know, when you're having fellowship with God, you don't have to be saying anything. You don't have to be doing anything special. You're just alive with a conscious realization of who God is. And every thought and is holding toward and well-being. And it's, and to me, that's the purpose and what prayer ultimately is and why Paul could say to pray without ceasing. Just live here in this place. Now, do I forget? Oh, yeah. All day I forget. You know, but circumstances, you know, I bring me right back in there. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, whoo. You know, Dad's in charge. You're right here with me. I love you. Take a deep breath. There he is.
One thing that I've learned to enjoy as a grandfather, more so than even when I was a father, and now as a great-grandfather, is just holding my grandkids and they're sleeping.
Oh, my gosh. Is that the best?
That's the best. Well, I think, you know, when I'm sleeping, when I'm not necessarily thinking about, you know, God or, you know, I'm working on a, you know, my lawnmower won't start or something.
Sure.
You know, I'm sleeping. But God enjoys, you know, I'm sure he enjoys that. He gave us that joy.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And so there's not even a, it's just the presence.
Yes.
Of his loved ones, even if we're sleeping.
And when it comes to, you know, where the religious world gets motivated the most to get this place of well-being is when things are wrong. oh my gosh, we gotta get the prayer team together. You know, we weren't getting the prayer team together when it was Thanksgiving, which is actually the main focus of prayer, is being thankful. You know, we want it when things are bad, you know, but this is a misunderstanding of what suffering's about. This life's about going through hard stuff and suffering, and they're for our glory. So another adjustment there that we can make. And I know there we also had some discussion about, you know, before getting into this, you know, people having answers to prayers, you know, is God answering your prayers? You know, well, then again, you're back to thinking that prayer is asking and receiving, you know, so I put in a request for something, you know, pay raise, whatever. I'm putting in my request and it's a yes or a no or a maybe. Well, toward well-being is not about getting answers. It's about this place where we are, you know, of relaxation and comfort. It's this glorious place we are, you know. You say, well, you know, but I know people who pray and you know, God answers their prayers. You know, another person, we were talking about influences at the beginning. And one of the great influences also of my life was George Mueller, his biography. He lived 92 years, and he's this like prime example of a prayer warrior. And he prayed all kinds of things into happening. And he kept this meticulous journal. He wrote down every request he made to God. I mean, detail. And he claims to have had 50,000 answers to prayer, positive answers to prayer. What I want to know is how many requests were in the journal. Because even a clock that doesn't work is right twice a day. And if you ask enough things, you know, if I ask for it to rain today and you ask for it not to rain today, you know, my garden's looking bad and I need some rain. Lord, would you please send some rain today? And you've got a picnic planned and you say, Lord, please don't let it rain today. One of us is going to think you got an answer.
Well, you know, that was always one of the pressures they put on you. You know, if they're checking, how are you doing spiritually? Questions, are your prayers being answered?
Yeah. Yep. Right. Jeez. You know.
And so that's all. Well, maybe I'm not praying. It goes back to what we talked about before. I'm not praying hard enough. Not praying.
Yeah.
Not getting enough people to pray with me and all that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure. So
it's, you know what? Just like everything else we learn from the scriptures, this is all good.
Oh yeah.
This is all good. You know, and there's no formulas. When we just understand that it's this place of well-being that we're holding everything in, and God gets us there, and the realization of God is realizing his presence in our lives in every moment, and in love and care. And I'll tell you what.
That's freedom.
It is freedom.
And peace.
And peace. Yes. Thank you.
Well, this has been very helpful to me, and I'm sure it will be helpful to our listeners. And we'd love to hear your comments. We'll see you next time. Thanks for
watching. All right. I love you, brother.
Love you.